This is Jerry Bain podcasting from the Fall 2010 meeting at the Coalition for Networked Information. I'm here with Tad Schull, editor of Jazz Studies Online at the Center for Jazz Studies at Columbia University. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Sure, my pleasure.
First of all, can you describe JDISC for us? It's something you're presenting on today. And could you talk about what JDISC is and what sorts of data users will have access to?
Yes. First, I should say, it's all about what JDISC will be. It's a prototype version of a database of information about jazz recordings that will be made available for research. That is just the data on everything that happened at a jazz recording from its creation, its production, its post-production, its dissemination, all the data generated there.
And what sort of access will users have online?
When it finally goes online, they'll have access to all of it, be able to search all of it in almost any combination where there's meaningful stuff to be searched. And they'll be able to run and save searches.
Oh, great.
Okay, that's any internet viewer.
Wow. So that's open to everyone.
Yes.
And your abstract states that the database will allow experts to edit and comment on the data as well as exchange ideas about related search issues. Will everyone have the ability to edit and comment like Wikipedia, or will there be a screening process? And how do you manage collaborations like that?
Well, there's a couple of questions. One is the level of access and write privileges, and then the question of managing the people who do have that. Right now, it's only an invited panel of 20 experts who we give network IDs and write access privileges to modify the data. That's the kind of database it is. It does take considerable experience in discographic work to be involved at this point. When we go online, we'll probably open that to far more and screen them, again, for some kind of credentials in scholarship as much as jazz, but it will probably never be modifiable by anyone with an internet connection.
And what are some of the challenges that you find with documenting such a fluid and varied art form?
As far as the data itself, just for openers, the fact that the original data for any given recording session, once it's done, comes from the record companies. Or when you start to think what those entities are, you can guess that you're going back to a small company that never saw any reason to capture data. People, nevertheless, have labored for years to go back to them and try and find out exactly what happened at a session, which is very important to jazz. Certainly, musicians' attitude towards it, that they could always do something better the next day, whether or not anybody thought what they did was absolutely marvelous, no matter how many times they tried, every iteration was great. Musicians were always moving on. So they weren't thinking too much about the data other than their repertoire, which they could also be very slippery about.
Right.
So to try and track what really happened when, so that you know that when you have a disc in your hands, which is how all of us relate to as listeners, it becomes very difficult to get to the truth. This field has been very obsessed with accuracy precisely because of the challenges there. Now, there's born digital music, or born digital, should I say, issues of recordings that never were released by a label. For instance, they're released by the artists, eliminating the middleman. This is happening, and this is probably the cutting edge, musically speaking. They're not necessarily putting metadata, baking it in. So those are some of the challenges about the data. As far as us capturing the data, there's another whole level of challenges. We're looking at print and digital sources and some authoritative versions of those that we can rely on without us having to go back to the recording studios, which may or may not exist anymore.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, jazz is such a myth-filled genre of music that it seems like there would be some problems with finding accurate data for all recordings, you know?
Well, right. You could say a putative session, but there are indeed mythical sessions that myths get built around,
right,
like Miles Davis' Kind of Blue or his Bitches Brew, which should be listened to in any form you can get your hands on. Miles Davis had a way of building myths. But yes, one of my colleagues, very experienced discographer, said, you've got to watch out. Some of the musicians that I've dealt with, it was as though they were in the business of creating misinformation about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
For various reasons.
So in the tradition of humanities and arts, most scholars work on their own, but in many, many digital projects, collaboration is involved. What kinds of expertise did you seek in these collaborators you've chosen to work with on this project?
Yes, it was very important to have a range of expertise and certainly to get feedback and not simply build a database ourselves. So we sought people first with library and digital reference expertise, the kind of people that I expect to be addressing here and talking about the project, and then who I'm here to learn from. People with simply jazz expertise, people with specific experience in jazz discographical work. We chose, for balance, people who do jazz studies, cultural studies applied to jazz, but without discographic background or even interests. People from the record industry and people with tech expertise.
It's a nice round panel.
Let me add, sure. With 20 people, of course, most of them overlap in some of those categories.
Yeah. So there are many terrific resources in the arts on the web, but there doesn't seem to be an effective mechanism for alerting people to their existence. Are you guys thinking of approaches other than discovery via Google that will help people become aware of JDisc?
This is a good question. We're certainly thinking of it now. That's ahead of us at this point. We have to build something. As I see it, if you think of it as a kind of publicity, we're doing publicity, traditional, digital. I'll just speak to the audiences that we're targeting, the people that we want to get to use it in the end. Right now, the word is, I would say, spreading virally. We've contacted some key end users, and they, in turn, have told their colleagues about it. They all want to see this happen. In other words, we have listservs among people in the field, announcements to allied organizations, jazz studies centers in the U.S. and Europe. At some point towards the end of the grant project, we will try to do some media placement when we have a story to tell. Mm-hmm. Another interesting possible end use is of musicians. And I could talk about why they would be interested. Let's say they would have a professional interest as well as just listeners and consumers of data about recordings or of the recordings that are being accessed. It's possible we could reach them through some kind of industry sites, music sites, arts organizations that might particularly engage with these musicians. Students, I'll just say that's important. End user at the end and through social networking, mm-hmm. which we're looking into now.
Oh, that's great. So how did you come to the project? Can you talk about some of the origin, how you came to the project and what you're interested in it?
I come to it as the editor of Jazz Studies Online. That was a project of the Center for Jazz Studies before I came, but I came on as editor. And Jazz Studies Online is meant to provide reference and teaching resources on jazz of all kinds. That's its mission. So it was launched, it was set up. I began editing the materials. When we sought new projects, we realized that there was a need for a comprehensive online jazz discography. The idea originally came from my colleague, the editor-in-chief of Jazz Studies Online, John Swed.
Well, thank you so much for your time. Very much appreciate it.
Thank you, Jerry.